This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brock Huard. And Brock Huard.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Huge moves by the Seahawks yesterday as they opted to release three veteran players who are all in the top eight in terms of their salary cap structure. Talking about Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and Will Dissly, all three released yesterday. So they save a significant amount of money on their cap. Although, man, they are paying up a lot of dead money. Not Russell Wilson level dead money, but a lot of dead cap hit. A whole lot more than you would expect, certainly at the safety position. Yep. Brock, I saw yesterday. I was pumped. Not because of any of these three players. I mean, I guess it was obviously time to move on from Jamal. But the other two, like, they're good players, and I like them, and they're good guys. And there's a lot, you know, to like about both of them. Mm-hmm. It's time. Mm-hmm. It's time for them to start making changes, for them to not just say, oh, it was a coaching issue. It's time for them to right side this roster, make it look the way it's supposed to, get the talent at the right spots. And I love what they did yesterday. Really do.
I think it's easy for fans, Salk, that the watch on Sundays, pay attention during the week, and just genuinely connect with these guys and like them as human beings. And they are. I mean, they're people first, they're players second. And you can start to understand why, you know, some fans would get upset. What do you mean, Uncle Will? I love Uncle Will. That's Bozeman Billy. I mean, that guy is, you know, was our fourth rounder, and he was developed here, and he can still block. He's still a great. Yeah, he's all of those things. And this has nothing to do with them as people. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't even have necessarily to do with them as players, because I think both Will and Quandre can still play. It just comes down to value, right? I mean, it just comes down to something you said from day one, year one, as you looked at players. You don't pay for what they've done in the past. You've got to pay for what they can do in the future as you project them out. And there was no way from a valuation standpoint, as you kind of looked at your roster, and I think this is also part of the reason, Salky, those coaches stayed home and didn't go to the combine. They had a lot of work to do on their systems, on their people, and how the current roster would fit with what these guys want to do. And with what they want to do, this, from a value standpoint, didn't make sense for Quandre, didn't make sense for Will. And yeah, thankfully for me, Jamal won't be a Seahawk anymore.
Gosh, the Jamal thing is such a disaster. I started writing about this last night, and you can read the whole thoughts at seattlesports.com. It went up late last night, and hopefully you can read it this morning. But it, you know, as you start going through how they got into this mess, it's amazing how much the Jamal Adams trade was a black hole. Like, it just kept sucking resources, right? First, it sucked the two first-round picks and the third-round pick and Bradley McDougal and everything that went out the door with that pick. And then it, you know, started to suck resources because you needed to help at safety, because it turns out he's not really a safety. And so you needed to spend money on Quandre, and you needed to spend money on Julian Love. And it's you start going through, and then the money you spent on him and those guys, it's a lot. That you know, Matt, who played the Matt interview, where he talked about energy vampires.
Yeah.
This was just like a resource vampire. It just kept sucking away.
Yeah, and that guy was an energy vampire. I don't care what Quandre and some of the other guys said, too. I don't care how much Pete covered for him. I don't care. I mean, he was just an energy vampire. And some of his stuff off the field, it was just done. I cannot do this anymore. And yeah, unfortunately, Salk, some of these big swings over the years, and Jamal was a big swing. Percy was a big swing, right? Jimmy was a big swing. The big swings have not really resulted in the power from it, you know, the production from it. Mm-hmm. A bunch of the singles certainly have. You know, our guy Hawkblocker over there kind of put together a list of all of them. Maybe later in the show we can kind of grade these different moves and trades, because the singles, man, the on paper, seemingly the small ball moves, man, it netted a bunch of runs, a lot of production, started with Marshawn right at the top of that list. So, you know, you're going to have swings.
And put Quandre there too, fifth round pick.
That's
for
right.
Quandre Diggs, great deal.
Great deal. And, you know, you're going to have swings and misses. You're going to want your GM, you know, to take on some of that risk, to be willing to go for it. But, yeah, this Jamal one stung. And I think once you study a lot of this with the cap and everything else, and we talk about it in team build, and we talk about it with the draft, and the one thing you can't do is just get out of balance. And that position was so out of balance. And I know the over the cap stuff is, you now look at the dead money for those two. Whoa. I mean, it is a ton of dead money.
It's really pretty crazy, isn't it?
Yeah, for a position that is, it's really, really important, but it also still is a position that's dependent on the people in front at the line of scrimmage. And yeah, that thing got out of whack.
So what are they doing? Are they rebuilding? I know that's kind of a dirty word, and you and I have talked about how it doesn't mean the same thing in football as it does in baseball. So when I say rebuild, I don't mean like a five-year project where you tear it down, et cetera. But if you are moving on from these three players, and we'll see, I'd be surprised if this was it. I would think there's still more moves for them to make.
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing?
Yeah, they're reshaping in the image of this staff. So, and in the image of John Schneider. You know what, that little Tuesday presser, or maybe it was even Pete's final presser. I'm confused. It's been a little while between the two. But when I think it was John that said, yeah, man, one day Pete and I could have an amazing podcast. Mm-hmm. I would love to circle back to some of these big moves, some of these big swings. I would love to circle back to Jamal Adams. And, you know, who really, I know in the end, John's going to say it wasn't a Pete move. It wasn't a John move. It wasn't a Pete pick. It wasn't a John pick. It was a we pick. And he's absolutely right. And that's how the organization ultimately was run. But I'd be very curious to see if that was total simpatico or if that was a lot of, you know, the guy that no longer here that wanted that kind of juice.
Well, I think we're going to find out based on how they go moving forward, right? Mm-hmm. If those moves continue to look similar, then you're probably going to say, hey, John had a big role in that. And if they don't, you'll say, all right, I guess that was Pete and John was just kind of doing his job.
Yes, and then naturally this head coach who's going to shape the roster in his view and his eyes and in the way that he wants to do it is going to have a big say in that. Mm-hmm. And look at John as he returns from the combine and said, hey, we spent a lot of time here. You know, our staff, we're all on the same page. Our systems are going in, and we really think that, man, we do not need to spend ever $18 million on a safety that can't cover. Like, that's not going to happen within our system. And we need to kind of shape our resources here. I'll tell you this, too. I mean, yesterday was the end of the franchise tag period, Salk.
Mm-hmm.
And Leonard Williams, who was kind of maybe late teens, early 20s when it comes to these top 100 free agent lists, well, he's in the top 10 now. You know, I looked at that list after, I don't know, a half dozen of these guys or close to it were either signed by their teams or franchised or what have you. And there was a list last night that he's number eight, the number eight free agent out there. You know what the number eight free agent's going to make with the salary cap going up to 255 and teams, tons of them out there that have to spend?
18 a year.
Oh, my gosh. So, you know, are you going to do that? Are you going to spend, you know, $18, $20 million? Are you going to give him $40, $50? If this market goes crazy for a 6'6", 290-pound difference-making defensive tackle who's still 29?
I mean, I'm okay with that because I really, really don't want you to have wasted that second-round pick, and he's a position that actually has value. Yeah. You're not talking about doing it for another safety or a tight end or a wide receiver. So, yeah, I don't know exactly what this means, but it does tell me that if they don't compete fully in 2024, I'm not going to be that surprised, given some of, you know, the decisions that they seem to be making and the long-term effect that they should have. This salary cap's going to take another year or two to get right. Their coaching staff is probably going to take another year or two both to grow into it and also to hire all the guys they really want, because they kind of had to rush this process at the end this year, and I'm going to guess they'll do an even better job next year. So that might change the way you approach this draft. It might change the way you approach your current roster. It might change the way you approach free agency this year if you're really building to be better in 2025 and 26.
Or you're going to look at the Houston Texans, and you're going to look at the LA Rams, and you're going to look at the Seattle Seahawks of 2022 and say, there's no like rebuilding. There's no tearing it down.
Mm-hmm.
It's getting the right pieces that fit together, and a couple of the really right ones like Matthew Stafford or CJ Stroud or comeback player of the year Geno Smith. And you know, it isn't about these free agent rosters. It isn't about all this big money. It's about, you know, doing it the right way and having balance within your cap and balance on your roster. And you know what I always love, Salk? Young and hungry. I've loved that for years and years. Give me young and hungry. Young and hungry, especially in space, especially on the perimeter away from the football. Give me a little more veterans. Give me a little more IQ. As the closer you get to that football, the center, the guards, you want to have a little age on there, a little wisdom on there. You can make up for that. But in space, in today's game with the speed, give me young and hungry out on that perimeter. And I think we started to see the first steps of that yesterday.
Ugh, let me just tell you how much I hate this text right here. Wide receivers have more value than a defensive tackle in today's football. Ugh.
Yeah, no.
Gag. Nope, I'm going to totally disagree with you. I think John Schneider would disagree with you. I think Brock Heward will disagree with you. And whether they have value or not in the game of football, the Seahawks are telling you what kind of team they want to be. If you do want to stop the run and run the ball and be physical and all of that, You got to have defensive linemen. You got to have offensive linemen. You got to be built up front.
Yeah. And the biggest premise, and I think miss on that text is, okay, yeah, wide receivers do have great value in this league today. And you know what there are a lot of? And a lot of in this draft?
A thousand of them.
A lot of wide receivers. A lot of supply. You know what there's not a lot of? You know what don't grow on trees? Difference making offensive and defensive linemen.
Come right back with everything you need to know, including a split squad game from the Mariners, Brock. I'm going to play you some sound that is going to put a smile on your face next.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Seahawks can look a whole lot different next year. They are releasing safeties Jamal Adams, Quandre Diggs, and tight end Will Disley, according to Over the Cap. The moves should open around $24 million in cap room. They have, what, 36 or so now in cap space for the upcoming season, and that's middle of the pack, 16th in the NFL. That space is great. They need it, obviously, and I'd imagine they could still open up some more, restructure, or cut down the price on Tyler Lockett and Brian Monet. Like, there's still some stuff that they can do. But what's important to me is just starting to get a handle on how the money is spent on this roster, how it's constructed. All three of these players were in the top eight in terms of their annual cap hits. That can't happen with two safeties and a tight end.
No. No, and it reminds me a little bit of our team that we were down watching closely in Peoria last week, and that Dave and Bob are gonna and Lefko are gonna head down and watch down there. You just can't run it back. Right? If the Mariners would have run it back with Teo and with Geno, and could they have been a game better? Maybe. Maybe. But just with the age and the stage that they're at and the money being paid, you just gotta develop. You've gotta always be developing your own. You gotta bring your guys along, and it's why I like that young and hungry Salk. It's why, like, nobody washes a car like the owner. All these little adages that I think about my years in Indy with Reggie Wayne and obviously Peyton and Marvin and Dallas Clark, and like, you just kind of replenish, but you do it in your image. And for Tony Dungy and Bill Polian, it was, we are going to draft and we're going to play young people defensively, and we're going to spend our money on Peyton and Edrin and Reggie and Marvin, and that's our engine that makes it go. What is this engine? What does this new staff want? What exactly, and how are they going to build this car from the inside out? We started to get a little look at it yesterday, and this is the right move, the right time. Nothing against any of those guys personally, but from evaluation and professionally, this was a step that had to be taken.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
I told you I was going to put a smile on your face with one small piece of sound, Brock. You ready for it? Here it is.
1-2. Swung on, hard hit, and it's through for a base hit into left field. Rounding third base is Sam Haggerty. He's going to score easily. And Julio, his second base hit, drives in a run. The Mariners take another one back at 6-4.
Isn't it nice to just hear Julio coming up with an RBI single?
Julio. You know, it was nice just to hear the knock of the wood right there. You just knew from the sound of that bat who that was.
I don't know. You want to hear it again? Listen to the sound of this bat.
The 1-2. Swung on, crushed left field. It is on its way. On the berm, gone, Mitch Garver. A no-doubter, three-run blast.
Yeah, it was just a loud day at the ballpark.
What was Hulk Hogan's name in Rocky 3? Rocky 2? Was it Thunder Lips?
Thunder, yeah, that sounds right.
Thunder Lips. As I watched Garver around the bases yesterday, he's Thunder Thighs, man. Thunder Thighs. And he just unloads. That's now his second homer.
Yep.
And that was a no-doubter. Both those guys, they know how to hit the ball.
Thunder Thighs, I'm glad. Unfortunately, while it was an offensive day in that game, Logan Gilbert was the victim on the other side, but Evan Carter got him for two home runs.
You're all right, considering, which is kind of weird. I think it was just leaving pitches over the middle of the plate. I'm not really going to go and change everything after something like this. I think it's just location and, I got the two strikes sometimes and then walked a guy or got ahead and then hit the guy with a splitter. So just like little things that you clean up in spring training.
I think it was Evan Carter, right? Solo home run twice. And then the grand salami.
Yeah. Yikes. Yeah, kind of could live without that.
He's pretty good.
You don't mind.
That guy's pretty good, too.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Split squad games yesterday, so Jorge Polanco had a couple of hits in the other one. And then, again, the best news, Matt Brash, able to throw from 60 feet yesterday. Wasn't pitching, wasn't a full bullpen, but he was throwing, and he said afterwards he's not too concerned.
You never really know, especially with elbow stuff, so I was just taking it day by day and seeing what the experts said and all that. But I feel like deep down I kind of knew that it wasn't as bad as maybe some other people thought or what it was. And it's kind of just off season. Sometimes it just takes a while for things to get going and get back in the rhythm through a lot last year. So Might just take me a little longer this year to get back into it, but yeah, like I said, it's all good out there.
And Shannon, good point by Shannon that this is really only his second year as a reliever. Mm-hmm. Like, he's been a starter for most of his career. He is still kind of learning and figuring out how to handle the offseason.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Great win for the Kraken that last night. Seriously, Brock, it's so frustrating, this team. Right when you're like, okay, fine, just lose out and make some trades
just
and be
done. Just be done.
They come out and they play some of their best hockey of the year over the last two games. Jared McCann's been on fire.
Connor gets to it. Broken up. Gord springs McCann. Shorthanded. He scores! That's hockey, baby! Jared McCann does it again. Short-handed goal, back-to-back nights, and the Kraken have a 2-1 lead.
They're like mirror images of each other, those two goals. Just really beautiful, beautiful goal scoring.
Who was that over last night?
That was over Winnipeg.
Okay.
It was over the Jets. Joey DeCord was great. He's so fun. Made one of the great saves you'll see right at the end of that game after he'd lost his stick. So another good win for the Kraken, but they're still six back of a whole bunch of teams.
Yeah, trade deadline is Friday.
Yeah, no more games before the trade deadline. It's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Broncos.
Should we be getting concerned about their couple young stars?
Yes.
Beniers, Shane Wright.
Yep.
Like, you know, we talk about football and you know what you gotta have? You gotta hit in the draft.
Yep.
You know, you gotta have Cam Chancellor and Richard Sherman and Bobby Wagner and Russell and then you gotta add, you know, some of those pieces, but you gotta have your young stars, and when you have huge draft capital, you got to be right. And Devin Witherspoon sure feels like that dude is right.
Yeah, I'm not like panic button on Beniers yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'm worried, but I wouldn't say I'm panic button at all. I mean, he's still a really young player who's come up and played pretty well, and he's playing on the top line, which is probably not where he's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm not going to kill Matty Beniers or give up on that. Shane Wright, I'll tell you what, when they trade Alex Wenberg here in the next couple of days, he better come up and he better have an impact. Mm-hmm. Like, it's time to see it from him. Riker Evans was in the lineup last night. I want to see more of him. I know there's a couple of other young guys that they have. Like,
you could only leave your Nissan truck running in Coachella so long.
That's enough.
I mean, you can only.
That is
you
really
can only
enough.
Leave it in that, Coachella.
Is that why you talked about
so
this?
No.
Is this just to bring up the Nissan truck in Coachella?
No.
What's wrong with you? Is that all this was?
No, more in Justin and I.
Quotes.
Maura and Justin and I were sitting up in the press box the other day. You were putting an article together. You kind of scrambled in and you missed. They had two vehicles. One had their lights on and one was running. It is my favorite part.
Well, all I did was run out of gas, lose my glasses, lose my sunglasses. I mean, like, I was a total disaster
so
down there in the desert.
So you left one rental car running in it for an entire concert and you let the other one run out of gas.
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing, Maura. All these rental cars now, they all operate differently. None of them use the same rules.
Sure, yeah.
Sure. Like, my car, I know how it operates. I don't have any problems, but they could standardize some of this stuff.
Does this
it's
sound
these
like
rebel
a,
rental cars.
Is this a Progressive commercial? I just don't understand all these rental cars.
I don't know how you kids do it these days.
I mean, they're all different.
You know how to turn them off and when to fill them up with fuel.
Charles Davis going to join us next. He was all over the combine last week. It's Brock and Salk, CL Sports on 710CLSports.com.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Busy time in Seahawks land, that's for sure, is... And this offseason has just been all over the place, Brock, right? I mean, you get the coaching change, first Pete and then Mike McDonald and then, you know, big moves coming out yesterday with the two safeties and the tight end all released. And in the middle of all of it, you know, you've got first round pick that you kind of need to get right, especially without a second round pick right now. Things are very, very up in the air.
And then you got
a
draft with elite receivers, elite tackles. And as you look at your roster, those aren't your biggest needs.
No. And then you got these six quarterbacks that are out there as well. Charles Davis joins us right now. He did a great job at the combine last week. Charles, how are you, man? Good to talk to you.
Great to talk with you guys. I appreciate the kind words. Hope everything's going well up there in the Pacific Northwest.
Well, it is a very interesting time here for sure. And with the moves that the Seahawks have made here, I am thinking a lot more about the future of the quarterback position in this town than I have been for quite some time. You were there. You got to see this whole quarterback class that – maybe it's not quite going to be 1983, but they might have five drafted in the first round. That wouldn't be out of the question. What'd you make, and how do you judge these guys?
Yeah, and listen, it would knock me off my chair if somehow six got in. It just wouldn't, because you guys know the quarterback position is the key position. And sometimes you just have a feeling that, hey, if I don't do this now, when do I come back around and do it? And the sixth person would probably be someone trading back into the first round late to try and get that fifth year on the contract with him. Maybe even someone who has a quarterback now, but they feel like it's a bridge more than what's going on with him. And maybe he gets in and gets a year and then gets a chance to be the starting quarterback. But look, what we saw and what we're evaluating as we go, there's still plenty of time to get it all, you know, exactly like you want it. There's three at the top. None of them worked out. Okay. We knew that was coming. Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and of course, Drake May. Is that going to hurt them? Not in this day and age. Okay. By the time it's all said and done, they will come off the board 1, 2, 3, I believe, in whatever order that's going to be. I believe Caleb Williams is almost a lock at one. As soon as you see Justin Fields on another team, you know it's done, but that's just where we're going. Then it's a matter of who takes Daniels or May right there at two with Washington. And I'm just, you know, kind of urging New England, unless you get a heck of an offer, don't overthink it. Grab yourself a quarterback, because you don't have one right now. Okay. I mean, you just don't. You can talk about it. We can rehab this guy. We can do that guy. They don't have it, and they have no firepower. You might as well get your guy and try and build around him. That's just me. Then I think you get to the next wave, and I think it starts with J.J. McCarthy of Michigan. Almost standing by himself a little bit, because I think he's distanced himself a little bit from Bo Nix and from Michael Penix. Not a ton, but enough. And to the point where he could very well be a top 10 pick. Then we get into the Bo Nix, Michael Penix deal. You know, Bo Nix in a lot of ways, look, Brock, we really should be very careful with comparisons, right? We got to couch him a little bit. But Bo Nix's accuracy in his last 2 years at Oregon has to remind people that Drew Brees was that accurate quarterback. And, oh, who's sitting at 12 and has no quarterback? Oh, that's right, Denver. So you know, there's a match to be made. Does Denver want to make that match, and do they see it the same way maybe someone like me does? I don't know. And then the last two times I've seen Michael Penix and Bo Nix together, Senior Bowl and at the Combine, Michael Penix's arm talent just continues to flash. All right, and by the way, everyone's talking about the injuries. You guys know this better than anyone. Last 2 years, did he have injury issues at Washington? No. Okay, so I think he's going to pass that test pretty well. I don't think we're going to spend a lot more time on, well, he's got all these injuries and what have you. He hadn't had them the last 2 years. He's played through them. That's where we are. Then after we're done with those guys, because it's really two waves, top group, second group, who is there a third group? I don't know that there's a third group, but Spencer Rattler kind of stands there from South Carolina as kind of the standalone day two, second, third round guy perhaps. And then after that, good luck. Okay, and I'm not saying it in a bad way. Just that at that point, I think we're out of the, well, will this guy be a starter for me? Like Rattler could very well be a starter for someone, I don't think right away. But could he develop? Now, is there anyone left that can develop into that? Is it Pratt out of Tulane? Austin Reed out of Western Kentucky? Joe Milton out of Tennessee. You see where I'm going with this?
I see what you're doing, Charles.
It becomes much more problematic.
I see what you're doing. You got all these names now. You've been studying for months, and now you just love to spit them out like chiclets. I know what you're doing right now. I know that.
Brock has just left the quarterbacks because there aren't a ton of them, so I can spit these names out.
There you go.
Yeah, tell us about the seventh best guard in this draft.
You know, well, listen, the best guard in this draft is going to be whether it's a center, because some of these centers will be guards right away. Like Cam Jurgens came out of Nebraska as a center. He's been playing guard in Philadelphia waiting for Jason Kelce to retire before he slides back over. Hmm. We could have the same thing happen with a Zach Frazier from West Virginia, a Graham Barton coming over from Duke who's been a left tackle and kicking inside. Jackson Powers Johnson, you know, Johnson, listen, I think he's going to start at center right away, but I think the other three are capable of starting center right away too. Just depends on who drafts them.
Okay, so you not only do the NFL Network an amazing job, the Senior Bowl and the draft and all of it, and you're going to be all over it for the next month and a half. You're also up there with, who is this? Is it Ian Eagle? Who do you get to hang out with during the season? Yeah.
I get to hang out with Ian. I don't know if he's thrilled about it, but I like it.
He's a riot, man. It's hilarious. He is such a funny dude.
And you guys, over the years, have seen the Baltimore Ravens, I'm going to guess, a fair amount of times over there on CBS. Maybe came across Mike McDonald in a production meeting once or 100 times. So we get news yesterday, no Jamal, no Quandre, no Will, make those moves, and we'll see. There's probably going to be more. Salk and I talking about just the reshaping of this team, with John Schneider now, the lead dog and all of that, but Mike McDonald beside him. As Mike McDonald starts to reshape this team in his vision, what do you anticipate it looking like? And I guess the first step of that would be free agency, and then obviously the draft in 6 weeks or so.
Yeah, I think, you know, based off of what we've seen and how things are going, and I very quickly, I need to ask both of you, did any of those moves surprise you?
No.
No.
Because I had zero. I mean, I didn't even arch an eyebrow. Like, I didn't even do the Rock trying to arch it for the and bring to people's elbow.
Wow.
So, I mean, look, those were to be expected, right? Those are kind of simple because of money, age, injury issues, all the things you can list, right? Yep. All that happens. Now, if you talk about Mike McDonald from the time that I've been around him, use Kyle Hamilton as kind of a guide for you. We all know finding Kyle Hamilton is not easy because of his ability to do so many different things. But he likes his defenses and his players to be able to do many different things. So that's what was going to be interesting to watch and see. The other part is they did such a great job with the Ravens. We had them against Miami, I think it was New Year's Eve. Big-time ball game, because if Baltimore wins, they clinch the number one seed. Miami's still trying to show the world that, hey, we're not just a flashy group, we can play. You get the idea. Watching that game, Baltimore kept losing secondary players. Like top-line secondary players, like Marlon Humphrey, can't play. They were starting all year with, I can't remember his name now, Kenneth Darby. He goes down. He doesn't even play in the game. All of a sudden, you look up, Rocky Sin, who had been a third, who they'd gotten to hopefully be a starter, he'd been dropped to third team. Arthur Mollette, who's kind of been a special teams, occasional nickel fill-in, he's on the field. My point being, all these guys filled in and played really, really well. You're going to get a coach that's going to make sure that all his guys are coached up and ready to play. And then he will adapt to who's on the field in terms of calls on defense, how you can work different things, what works for the guys that are out there versus, oh, this is my system, this is what I'm going to call. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not going to ask Arthur Mollette to be Marlon Humphrey, right? He's going to know what he has, who's out there, and then adapt and play accordingly. And then maybe lean on some other guys, because in that game – I think he pulled aside Patrick Queen and Roquan Smith and said, fellas, can you give me just a tad more? And boy did they ever.
Any Kyle Hamiltons in this draft? And I'm not talking a 6'4", 220-pound safety that can run like the wind and do all those things. But how about just, we know the receivers, quarterbacks, tackles, that all the conversation circled around them, and we'll talk about them. How about a defensive guy or two, Charles, that you kind of look at and go, okay, Mike McDonald's system, maybe they're at 16, maybe they trade back in the 20s, a guy that can just do and be a multiple player and not just a one peg in the puzzle, can actually do a few different things. Or anybody in this draft that jumps out in that regard?
You know, it's really hard to find that guy. It really is, Brock, because obviously we're basing on Hamilton being beyond sensational. Like, when I do this every year, I count my misses as much as I count my hits, all right? In fact, because the three of us, I'm pretty sure I know all of us together, we agonize more about the misses than we ever celebrate the hits because we want to get them all right. And we know that in scouting and in evaluation, you're just not going to. Hamilton is one that I will, like, if it ends tomorrow, that's the one I got right from day one and was able to stick with it. And then when he ran the 4.56 and everybody flipped out, he's too slow, he's this, I stuck with it. Mm-hmm. I knew he was that guy. What I'm looking at, though, is really like a Chop Robinson edge rusher from Penn State, guys. He blew away the combine with speed and agility and the whole thing. But I'm having this thing with Penn State edge rushers. I'm trying to figure certain things out. Odafai Owe, Mm-hmm. Remember, he was Jason Oway when he came out. He comes out of Penn State and he destroys us in the combine. You know, he runs like the wind. He jumps. He does everything. And then you look down and he had zero sacks last year at Penn State. Mm-hmm. Top Robinson blows us away this time again. He had four sacks this year. Mm-hmm. Production numbers out of Penn State don't always match what the potential is coming out. Mm-hmm. And I've been trying to figure out what I'm missing, how it goes, because the other guy opposite him, Adisa Isaac, who's not nearly as highly regarded, will probably be a day two, maybe even day three pick. He had 7.5 sacks and more pressures. Mm-hmm. So was it just everyone kicking everything to him? That's something I have to ask. But can Chop Robinson do more than just rush off the edge? Based off the speed, agility, what I saw, the answer is yes. He becomes a much more versatile piece because of what we've seen. I guess the closest, and I'll leave it here, would probably be Cooper DeJean.
Yep.
The safety out of Iowa. Mm-hmm. Because I can drop him in at the nickel. I can play him outside on the edge. I can bring him back to safety if I want to. I can make him a dime linebacker because of his size and his tackling ability. And then, of course, he can return punts. You know, I'm not even looking for kickoff returners anymore because I don't know how much longer I'm going to have to play anyway. But I want the punt returner because I think that's going to stay in it. But this kid, he might be the closest we have. And, of course, he's going to go through the scrutiny. A white secondary player who plays the corner. Look out. Here comes the Jason Sehorn conversation and the whole deal. I will take him and put him out there because people have forgotten that Jason Sehorn could play before he got hurt.
It's true.
Charles, are we going to hear surprisingly good athlete? I mean, just surprisingly.
Oh, God. You know, please. All I hope
sneaky
is
fast.
Don't let me
sneaky,
say
sneaky
it.
Fast. Yeah,
sneaky fast. Sneaky fast.
Oh, don't forget. Don't forget he's a gym rat.
Right, he's a gym rat.
Loves the game.
Well, and he's got great football IQ. You know, he seems to understand. He's got great football IQ, and that really helps him make up for the lack of speed.
Eats, breathes, lives football. I mean, and by the way, savvy.
Sneaky good athlete.
He understands that.
Well, and thankfully, the quarterbacks at the top of the draft are so athletic that's going to really help them out. And so we've really got this whole draft nailed, I would say.
My favorite part about a lot of that is that people do it so unconsciously that you know that they haven't really watched them play. I remember one time I called someone when Geno Smith came out. And I said, do you realize that you described Geno Smith as an excellent runner and very athletic and the whole deal? And he's like, what? Huh? What? I said, you haven't watched film or you really fell into the old, oh, he's a black quarterback. He must be able to run. Because Geno pretty much refused to run at West Virginia.
Yes.
Like when the lane was open, Geno was like, nope. Uh-huh. And I talked to him about it then, and I talked to him about it last year, because you see he's developed. Now he will actually take off and go.
Yeah.
And we had that conversation when he's coming out of school, mm-hmm. and he said, I believe I can beat people, firmly believe I beat people with my mind and my arm from the pocket. And I do believe that was an answer for so many people saying black quarterback –
yep.
You're going to be athletic. You're going to do it. And he's like, he and his group said, we're going to show something different.
So let me, I
do believe that was the answer to it.
We just have another minute with you. I want to ask you a couple of rapid fire, almost yes or no questions.
All right, go.
Will JJ McCarthy be available when the Seahawks pick at 16?
No.
Will, if Michael Penix is available at 16, should the Seahawks take him?
Drop down
and find a way to take him.
Mm-hmm. Drop down. I think you'll get him later.
Those two are pretty interesting to me. Would it be worth trying to, and is it possible to try to trade up into the top 10 to either get one of the top three quarterbacks or to get JJ McCarthy before one of these other teams can?
Here's my quick one. If you're going to get into the top 10 to try and get one of those four, I think you've got to make sure you get up ahead of six. That's how high you have to go to get one of the four.
Wow. You think McCarthy could go that high?
Wow. That's my humble opinion. Look, I just put out my first mock, and you know what it is about a mock draft, right? When you put out a mock draft, prepare to be mocked, okay? That's just how it works. I put McCarthy at six to the Giants, and that was my fourth quarterback. Mm.
That wouldn't surprise
me.
In
the first six picks.
I would rather have McCarthy than Daniel Jones. That makes perfect sense to me. Mm.
And by the way, I'd put five in the first round. I'm going to give you the spoiler alert. I sent Bo Nix to Denver at 12 because I don't do trades in mine. other people do trades, and they're much more imaginative. I just do it straight down the line, and wham, there it is.
Well, we appreciate it, man. Charles, this is great. Thank you for thanks for hanging out with us for a little bit. We love watching you at the Combine and get excited for the draft and everything else that you do. So thank you so much. We'll talk soon.
I appreciate it. And an awkward-looking guard who can play is Christian Haynes out of UConn. You're asking guards, I'm going to give you
What about guard. Zach Zinter? Where's my guy Zach Zinter? Went to my high school.
Zach Zinter is going to be just fine. Remember, he's got to get healthy. We didn't see him at the Combine.
He's got to be smart. He went to my high school. I'll tell you that much.
Listen, he's a Michigan offensive lineman. It's like being a Wisconsin offensive lineman.
He will be the first Buckingham Brown and Nichols Knight ever taken into the NFL in the history of the – he'll be the first professional athlete who went to BBNN ever in any sport other than maybe crew.
Are you the Golden Knights or the Black Knights or just simply Knights?
Straight up Knights, man. Blue and yellow, baby. Let's go. All right.
You don't need anything else.
Thank you.
You got to take care. Bye-bye.
Charles Davis. Ah, that was entertaining.
That guy speaks with a smile.
He does.
He truly does. He genuinely loves he genuinely loves it, all of it. He loves being a commentator there in the season with Ian Eagle and the number two crew at CBS, and he loves all of this.
I especially like him doing this stuff even more than color. Not that I don't like him doing color, but I like him as an analyst, draft analyst, you know, coming
you
on
like
as
relational,
a guest.
And he's relational.
He is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know. For some reason, I feel like he comes even out a little bit more, and I really enjoy him whenever
he's
on the
show. He was really patient with you when you kept cutting him off to talk about your high school there at the end.
Uh-huh. Maura. Would you play the Blue 88 music?
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, we're going to do a short version of Blue 88 today, Brock. Safety tandem, if the season were to start right now, is what, Kobe Bryant and Julian Love?
Yep.
Is that better than what you had last year?
Oh, it's not immediately better, no. But for the value, yes. And I know Julian got some money, and, you know, as Charles was speaking about Kyle Hamilton, is Julian Love a poor man's Kyle Hamilton? I mean, he could play nickel, he could play safety. Right, he was a corner at Notre Dame. He's one of those interchangeable pieces that's going to be, I think, very appealing because he's got a high football IQ. One thing about Kobe Bryant, when he played safety in the preseason, and I know it was a preseason and it's a different speed. You remember what he was? He hit people, man. Mm-hmm. He was willing to stick his face in there on those over routes and those crossing routes. And which of those two could be a center fielder? I don't think that's as big a priority in Mike McDonald's system. It's a different system on the back end of it. You don't just need that center fielder that can cover red line to red line. You're going to see some different looks. You're going to see some different coverages. And again, when these guys were home all week studying their personnel, studying their systems, watching tape on Kobe's preseason, watching all of it, I think it made him even more comfortable to say yesterday, yeah, time to move on from all of that money. We don't need it spent at that position right now.
All right, question number two. You're looking through position groups, Brock. How do you sort of start to tie them together?
Well, I think it really is resounding in Seattle, and it's also in the free agent market, Salk, and because the number one position that saw these salary cuts and player dump was safety. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the other position right behind it is running back. And I think those two positions in this league, and we saw it with Cam with Earl, you know, how hard it is to sustain what's asked of those positions, the violence and the collisions that come with running backs and particularly into safeties that will come up and hit you like Earl wanted to, like Cam wanted to. Those guys didn't duck, Salk. They didn't make business decisions. And because of it, the lifespan at that safety position was cut short for both of them in their careers here. And you just kind of look at the available free agents. You look at these quote-unquote cap casualties, and you know what you see a lot of? Safeties and a bunch of running backs. Can you imagine 25 years ago? 25 years ago, this game of football. The, what's that called? Crunch time?
Mm-hmm. Crunch course.
Crunch course. Like, you know, how esteemed the Walter Paytons and the Barry Sanders and the elite running backs were.
Did they just get cut.
Saquon wasn't even franchised.
Yeah.
Do you see the free agent running back market right now? It's insane.
Good thing you spent a couple of second-round picks, rather, on them.
Well, you want to draft running backs. You do. You want to draft running backs. They got a short lifespan. You want them hungry. Want them incentivized.
Or maybe you want to get them cheap when they're on their, you know.
Possibly.
Where they are now. I think there's an argument to be made.
Those two positional
directions.
Groups, I think, in time will be more and more tied together.
All right, question number three. We just talked about Penix, and if they were to trade back and draft mm-hmm. Michael Penix, Would he have the same offseason impact that he did with the Huskies when he first arrived here?
No, I don't think so. And that was a huge part of it. When you talk to Kalen DeBoer, and I was chatting with my friends down in Alabama yesterday, Salk, and Kalen met some of the big media power brokers down there, and all of them said the same thing. Brock, I can't believe it. It is a 180 from Nick Saban. This guy is showing his pictures on his phone. He's connecting with us. He's talking. Like, he's just genuine in that way. And Kalen would genuinely tell you one of the reasons why they won 11 games in 2022 was Penix. Penix came in the spring. Penix was there every day in the summer. Penix was leading the crew. Like, this is the system. This is what we do. He was bringing the Roma Dunzes and the McMillans and the Polks up to speed so they could hit the ground running. A lot of rules in the college offseason. You don't get a lot of time with the guys. It's a different animal in the NFL. And by the way, Geno's been in enough system that there will be new language. There can be some new things. There can be some new pre-snap movement. But it's not like a college kid that's learning calculus. Yeah, Geno's been in pre-calculus, and he's been in other calculus classes, and now I'm just going to learn this language. So that advantage that was huge for the Huskies, no, wouldn't play the same way in the NFL. Just different leagues, different amount of hours, different amount of backgrounds. Don't think it would be as big of an asset as it certainly was for DeBoer on Montlake.
All right, there you go. That is today's Blue 88. Three football questions with Brock every day at 7:45.
I nearly kidney punched you.
Why?
When you were going to ask him about the seventh guard, he was going to get to the seventh guard.
I know.
He was going to go for 4 minutes. And
he was joking.
No, you don't do it to him. You don't do it to Lewis Riddick. You don't do it to these guys right now.
They know too much.
Yes, they know too much. They have it all in their head. And you know what they want? They want to let it out.
I know. I'm sorry. They want
to let it go.
That was on me. Honestly, I'll own that one.
I felt bad. I had to cut him off as he's in his second name.
Yeah. No, we had a review on Apple Podcasts that I was reading earlier that said that I apologize every day on the show. I'll apologize for this one. That one's me. Yeah, it says, if you love whiny takes and a host who loves to apologize on the daily, then Salk's the host for you. Well, here you go. I'm sorry, Brock. I'm apologizing to you.
How many stars?
That was a 1-star review. Yeah, Oz Nation 30. Not a big fan.
Darn it!
Unfortunately. All right.
We get all these 5 stars.
He had one review that said Mike Salk is an inspiration.
It's true. Though. It says Salk is an inspiration.
Nice.
Of course, it says, despite having a face for radio and a voice for print, Salk has managed to make an entertaining and fun radio show with plenty of bad sports takes. And hey, you know what?
Wait, this you didn't tell us this part earlier.
Well, I didn't read the whole thing. I just read the title. I had 5 stars. It called me an inspiration. I didn't think that it was going to be mean after that.
Because you've overcome so many obstacles.
Face for radio and a voice for print.
My day is getting away from me, man. Kind of like the salary cap got away from the Seahawks with a few of these contracts. That's next. I'm Brock and Salk.